The Around the NFL Podcast knows what snap face is.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Combine week is here. But before we get to that, how about those Oscars? Ooh, va-va-voom.
Did you watch it? I didn't watch a second of it.
I watched a portion of it, and then I did what everyone else does in the 21st century. I saw the good parts on the internet in the morning.
I watched the entire thing, upset of the year.
Wow.
In a sports bar.
Oh, okay, that
with the
count.
Volume on.
That doesn't count.
That might be an only in L.A. thing. Or maybe I'm wrong, but definitely an L.A. staple that on Oscar night, which is a big deal here, that it would be treated almost like the Super Bowl, where volume up. That's when you know it's a big sports event, if you go to a bar and they're doing the volume. And the touch I always like, you know it's a good sports bar when they have the big game, volume up, commercial break, bang in with your jukebox. And then come
takes
out.
Takes a lot of coordination. Back.
Yeah, but I noticed that
you have
that
to be
extra
committed
effort
to being a good venue that day if you're going to do
right.
I agree with you. That's the golden ticket.
You did not watch it in the strangest place of anyone on this podcast, though. I mean, are you guys aware of where Sydney watched the Oscars?
I am. I could probably guess. It's a world of
laughter. Hey, guys.
Who is the crowd, Sydney, that goes to Disneyland to watch the Oscars? It seems like a strange combo.
Yeah, I was not even planning on it, but they sent out like a Facebook blast that was like, hey, if you have an annual pass, we're showing the Oscars at the Opera House on Main Street. And I was like, yes, that is for me. I am going to that.
Wow. And on your Facebook page, you called it the most magical evening, watching the Oscars followed by fireworks and a parade. What time are the Oscars over?
They finish around 9:30.
I mean, the fact that there's more fireworks and a whole parade unfurling at Disneyland after that, or Disney, it feels like a packed evening.
That's why New Money is so loyal to the brand, because she goes there and she says, I check my worries at the gate. Well, after I pay the $18 parking fee, I check my worries at the gate, and I'm a happy woman.
This is super accurate. So accurate.
There was no dry eyes in the house, you know, when the Moana girl came out.
Oh.
At least not in the Sydney group.
There was not. And there were a bunch
sang
of
the song.
There
Don't
were also were no dry eyes after the end. Well, not after the end, but at the end when they came back and said, just kidding, not La La Land. Mm. Everybody in the theater had a meltdown, and it was so great.
That seems like a Disney World, Disneyland crowd.
Wait, define the meltdown at the Disneyland airing of the Oscars.
It's like, you know, when you're watching a football game, let's bring it right back to sports. You're watching a football game, and there's like the surrender cobras or people like with their heads in their hands. That was happening all around me in this theater, and I was quite enjoying it probably
what a
more
world
than I should have.
Surrender cobra?
Yes, like you put your hands behind your head.
Never
like
heard of
this.
The Sydney's actually an operative for the Marines during the weekends, which she's not at Disney.
I don't typically wonder if she's substance-free or not. I know she is, but I have to question what she's describing.
This is the Monday edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. And, you know, people have been wondering what's going on with the schedule of the show. We've been doing two shows a week. First of all, you know, calm down. We're
Please.
Doing the best we can. But if it makes you feel better, if you do love listening to new shows three times a week, know that it's coming. It's not coming this week because Greg and I are heading to Indy tomorrow, and then we have it tomorrow Tuesday, and then we'll have a Thursday show, which will be kind of like a hybrid. Greg, myself, Kevin Patra, and Connor Orr from Indy with Wes and Sess in the studio. It'll be a fun show on Thursday, so two shows this week. And then next week, which is free agency week, start of free agency, three shows. And we anticipate, can't promise anything, we anticipate three shows every week through the draft.
Oh, probably, yeah, through mid-June, I would say.
Oh.
That's when we always do it,
Reg.
Well, okay.
That's when we've done it every year. Why would we be cutting back?
For the entire group.
Why would we be cutting back all of a sudden? We're going to be doing OTAs.
All right, keep
We're going to be doing
one of my
mini camps.
One of my earlier jobs in my career, a boss gave me that advice. He said, you know, under-promise, over-deliver. Greg just over-promised. Now we have nothing to do but just to hardcore deliver. Maybe that's good. Maybe that's your old boss.
We're going to do it.
good pep talk.
Hey, who am I to fight with NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal?
Now, we've got to be very quiet. Up in the clearing, we have the incredibly rare NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal. Oh, cracky, I scared it away.
That's one of my favorites. Who said that one, Sid?
That one's from Andrew Dahl from New York, at adolly27.
That was great.
Even got your little sound effect in there, which I enjoyed. Uh-oh.
Oh, my
gosh.
What do
we got? Breaking news this early in the show. What's going
Breaking
on?
Breaking news before the news. That's a first. Antonio Brown and the Pittsburgh Steelers have reached an agreement for Brown to be the highest paid wide receiver in football, according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. $15 million plus per year.
And that makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, there was some talk that he was getting on the nerves of people inside Pittsburgh. He had that issue with the Facebook Live posting and some immaturity issues perhaps. But the production speaks for itself. This guy has been the best wide receiver, Wes, in football, arguably, but statistically-wise, it's hard to argue it, for like 5 years.
Yeah, you can certainly argue that Julio Jones is the best wide receiver in football, but like you said, statistically, Antonio Brown has set records over the past few years. He's been the most productive wide receiver in football.
And, I mean, whatever the issues were with him and some of this off-the-field stuff, they made it very clear earlier this month that they wanted him to retire along with Le'Veon Bell as a Steeler, and they made it work quick. Now, I mean, we talked about there's other wide receivers that we'll get into today that could hit the open market, and I wonder how long he'll be the most highest.
Not long.
Receiver.
This is why the Steelers are the Steelers. They're smart. Yeah.
But isn't Antonio Brown's agents thinking, why not wait a little bit for this?
That's a fair point.
But yeah.
You see why the timing of it definitely makes sense from Pittsburgh's standpoint.
From their side, yes.
Right. I think, and we'll get into Alshon Jeffrey, but Ian also reported that he's going to hit the free agent market, or he's expected to, and I don't think there's any chance he doesn't top Antonio Brown. I really think he's going to make more money than Antonio Brown. So if you're the Steelers, who set a price on players and have been very good about that. I mean, remember when they let Mike Wallace go and eventually
– they gave his contract to Antonio Brown.
Yeah, exactly. And if Wallace had taken the lesser money, who knows what would have happened. But they did not want to pay Wallace more. They let Antonio Brown go. They let Emmanuel Sanders go. They set a price here for Brown. They're saying, hey, we can make you the highest paid receiver in the league. You got to take it now. He's going to take it. Why not? You know, it's a win-win. But I think the contracts are going to go crazy this offseason.
So there you go. Right off the bat, breaking news on the Around the NFL podcast. A show sponsored, of course, by Mr. Flame's economics class in The Hague, the Netherlands.
Mr. F.
And in addition to the latest in the franchise tag news, which the deadline is fast approaching March 1st, which is just a few days from now. We'll talk about what else is going on in the news. And then we will get to, and this is one of the big releases every year for Around the NFL, the Free Agency 101. Chris Wessling and Greg Rosenthal team up to break down the top 101 free agents. Saucy. And that came out Monday morning, hot off the presses, so we'll talk about that. But before we do that, we already did some news, but now we're going to do the rest. So, Sid, let's do it.
It's coming! It's headed right for us! It's already here.
Ah, yes. Bill Paxton passed away over the weekend, age 61. Great, a sneaky great career, Bill Paxton. Does anybody have a Bill Paxton favorite they want to throw out there, or a project? I like Big Love. That was an HBO show that
great
he was
in
star
that.
Of.
Great in that.
That I thought he carried that movie well. But in True Lies, I would love – I talked to Sidney before the show about what drop to use. That was from Twister, which was probably his most like well-known movie. But – in True Lies, he has some amazing lines. He plays like a cheap used car salesman that seduces Jamie Lee Curtis's character and then gets his comeuppance at the hands of Arnold Schwarzenegger. But a lot of good movies.
Totally likable guy. Like, I think he also is the kind of guy, whenever he was in like a scene, he would steal the scene. He was a scene stealer. He didn't start as an actor either.
I could see you, Mark, as a scene stealer if you were...
Can't even get on set.
In the Hollywood business.
That's a total what if. Not even live in the same town, couldn't be farther away.
All right, here we go. Let's start some news. Tag time. Tag talk. Tag, you're it. Okay, that's how we'll get into the segment. All of the franchise tags, some of the big names, and we'll start with the biggest one, and he is a teammate of Antonio Brown, and this came down shortly before we came upstairs to record today's podcast. Le'Veon Bell will not hit the open market. The team, that being the Steelers, placed the exclusive franchise tag on the running back Monday, according to Rap Sheet. The exclusive tag means he cannot negotiate with any other team. The Steelers later confirmed this news, and that tag is expected to surpass $12 million for running backs this season. Greg, I feel like Le'Veon Bell is one of those special players, and running backs don't get paid in the league. So $12 million, and we assume they're going to try to hammer out a long-term deal. But if he plays under this tag, that is a great bargain, I think, for Le'Veon Bell, considering how important he is, right?
Well, for this year, it's a fair price. I mean, he's going to be the highest paid running back in the league, maybe by a good amount. But the Steelers are using this exclusive tag sort of as a an olive branch. Like, hey, we do value you. We could have easily put the $8 million tag on you, and you would have been on our team, and you would have been stuck with it. But really, they're playing it smart. This is a guy who's had injuries, who's had suspension, and he's going to be playing for a one-year contract. And if he stays healthy and is Le'Veon Bell again, I'm sure he'll get a long-term deal next year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard for them to find common ground on a long-term deal because I think Le'Veon Bell wants record-breaking money for a running back.
And he's 25 years old, but he's hurt a lot. And right now he's rehabbing his way back from a groin injury that knocked him out of the AFC Championship. We know the knee issues he's had. He had reconstructive surgery. And he's had some off-the-field issues. So it's not a home-run, no-doubt decision, you would think, for the Steelers. And, Greg, you said if you could just clarify for the audience, the difference between the $8 million tag and
yes.
the $12 million.
Well, the exclusive tag means no team can try to trade for him. And it's a higher number. This year, it's $12 million for running backs. And the non-exclusive tag, which is basically what everyone else gets, in theory, other teams could try to trade for him and give up two first-round picks. It would have been $8 million. I mean, Le'Veon Bell should think about whatever the best long-term deal that they give him eventually this offseason in terms of an offer, whether it's 25, 30 guaranteed and you know, 10 or 11 a year, whatever. You should think about it because running back, you would hate to see a guy have a torn ACL and, like, lose that. I mean, it's kind of like one in the hand or what is it? What is the phrase?
One in the bush? Two in the bush.
I mean, that.
I hate that phrase.
That also means nothing in today's society, whatever. I'm sure it had a very strong
right.
meaning at one point.
That's like
let's kill it.
Joe
it's
Thomas,
over.
Your boy, Mark, on the Browns, he was tweeting about some of the questions he got asked at the Combine in 2007, and one of them was, would you look a gift horse in the mouth? What?
What?
How do you answer that?
I mean, back in 2007, that was probably a very – that made a lot of sense, that term. It's 10 years ago.
Anyway, in other franchise tag news, Chandler Jones, who was traded from the Patriots to the Cardinals last year, he has been hit with the franchise tag. He'll play under the linebacker tender, which is worth – $14.1 million for 2017. He did fulfill expectations, Chris Wessling, in his first year with Arizona, and you would think the Cardinals do not want him out of the building either now or 1 year from now.
We knew this was coming. Bruce Arians told everyone in early January, we will place the tag on Chandler Jones if we don't reach an agreement. They had no intention of letting him hit the market after he and Marcus Golden teamed for more sacks than any other duo in the league last season. So I think the key thing with Arizona now is do all three of Calais Campbell, Kevin Minter, and Tony Jefferson hit the market now that Chandler Jones has the franchise tag?
Campbell, I think, is getting there. He's going to end up, by the time all these tag guys are taken off our list, he's going to be in our top five, if not our top three. And I think he wants to see that money.
In other news, Kawan Short, Panthers standout. He also has been hit with the tag. The fifth-year defensive tackle will play under the tackle tender, which is worth tackle tender talk.
Tackle talk's back.
Tackle talk's back. Worth roughly $13.6 million in 2017. Mark Sessler, another expected move there.
Yeah, it's just a laundry list of completely expected franchise. It is. This is exactly the people that we thought, and they all, you know, they came today, and I think this makes sense for them. They've got a first rounder in Vernon Butler. They re-sign Mario Addison, and star Lutulelei becomes a free agent next offseason. So you've at least got Kawan Short around for this season, which is more than you can say for the guy they franchised last year, Josh Norman. I question if they would pursue, if they're truly going to pursue a long-term deal with Kawan Short. I think he's a great player, but you know, Gettleman sometimes does things differently.
I almost feel like when they let Norman go, they have to get Short signed. It's on them to do it just because he's a young, great player.
Are you saying it would be short-sighted?
Wants a lot of money.
And by the way, Mark, I don't like to call out a colleague on the pod, but it's actually pronounced...
Better not be me.
Yeah, it's you. It's pronounced Star Lutulelei.
Ah, my bad. Thank you. Well, that's your job to correct us in those situations.
You got to hit that accent.
You know who's tagged? Wasn't Greg Hardy tagged by them 2 years ago?
Well, it's 2 years
Greg
in a row
Hardy,
they've
Josh
had
Norman.
That's franchise tag nonsense. This time I think it will be clean.
You know, you're a real human gutter ball if you are unable to stay in the NFL with the amount of skill level Greg Hardy had. A little look back at a player that is no longer in the NFL. He was that bad a person that the NFL was able to overlook it and kick him out of the league. That's quite an achievement.
By the way, also someone at some point that the shadowy league figures hoisted on us as an interview subject for the early incarnation of this show.
That was before some of the allegations.
Well,
or
yes,
convictions.
No.
Or bench decision. It was a messy time, the Greg Hardy era. Let's just move on from it. One more tag, a little more tag talk. JPP, Jason Pierre-Paul, the pass rusher for the New York Giants. Did they put the tag on him last year too? They did sign him to a one-year, $10 million prove-it deal. He proved it, so now the Giants are tagging him again, and we'll see. Or tagging him for the first time. Somebody help me out here. Was he tagged?
They did tag him 2 years ago.
Okay, that's
I'm sure. I would guess he's the first player in NFL history to be tagged twice, with a year apart in between, all with the same team. It seems insane.
When you fall off part of your hand.
Yeah, yeah. I mean something.
What history?
There, but yeah.
Yes.
But we'll see. I mean, he's going to get paid a lot of money, JPP. But will a deal get done? I think we saw enough this year that the Giants would want to get something done, and they don't have any problem spending a lot of money on pass rushers. We know the Giants.
There were questions in years past if JPP was viewed as a little bit of a strange guy inside team walls, and I maybe that's changed. I mean, if they show this much interest in him, but that was out there amongst some of the beat writers.
What,
I mean,
that he was a weirdo?
You know, there was just maybe some questions about
a headache.
JPP, the person. But
this team employs Odell Beckham, if you want to talk about like kind of.
Well, they draft teams. Right, and I mean Odell Beckham. You what are you going to do? Let him walk across town to the Jets? I don't think so.
I mean the money's crazy, but it's the same per year that Vernon got, and I think it's a big trend in this free agent cycle and generally in the NFL. I don't think teams are going to mind paying huge dollars on one-year contracts or two-year contracts in some cases. Like, fine, we'll love to play you know, $17, $20 million a year, but they don't want to give the long-term money.
And none of these deals, these four, five-year deals, really aren't five-year deals
right.
to begin with. So they're just maybe it's a more of an honest approach.
All right, so some of these, Mark, you weren't impressed. You said these were expected, whatever.
It's not that I'm not impressed. I think that even weeks ago in articles, you know, outlining who would be tagged.
Tag primer, baby!
Sort of like six for six at this point.
All
so.
Right, so here's something to surprise some people, surprise me at least. The Bears not expected to franchise tag Alshon Jeffrey, their standout wide receiver. That, according to Ian Rappaport, he reported Monday they aren't expected to put the tag on him. He played under the tag in 2016, earning $14.6 million, and the Bears were given a decision to tag him again, which would put him at $17.5 million as a starting point, or at least a locked-in one-year salary. But they apparently aren't going to do that. And, you know, Wes, Alshon Jeffrey is maybe a guy with some red flags because he's had injury issues, but he's young. He's in his mid-20s. He's proven in the past that he could be as good as anybody when he's healthy. The Bears are in a rebuild slash got to make progress year with their current regime. Don't you want him in the building?
It's quite the conundrum for the Bears. You're talking about a guy who has had many injury issues, has not always played in shape, in football shape, was suspended last year, and yet if you let Alshon Jeffrey go and he becomes the highest paid wide receiver in football, who do you replace him with? The guy you drafted 2 years ago, Kevin White, has been so far an unmitigated bust. Even when he was healthy last season, he wasn't playing that well. So who is I know Cameron Meredith played well with Matt Barkley down the stretch, but I don't think anyone considers him a number one receiver. I think that you really have a bare-bones wide receiver core now.
They're just listening to you talk. They got to be high on the list of teams that'll be signing free agents. So I think they'll end up replacing Jeffrey with someone that's not $17 million, but maybe it's $10 million, DeSean Jackson, or who, you know, Kenny Britt or Kenny Stills, whoever it's going to be. I think they're going to end up having to spend some money at wide receiver.
To me, it points to they probably don't have a high opinion of him inside
exactly.
the building. Exactly.
I mean, they're the team more than anyone that knows his highs and also his baggage. And a lot of times we don't even know what a lot of that stuff is. It's also maybe just the price point.
I mean, the
for
price
someone
is,
that's not he's played 20 games over two seasons.
The PED suspension after getting hurt, like that combination, and they, you know, when he got suspended this year, John Fox had no forgiveness for him publicly. He basically didn't buy either didn't buy Jeffrey's excuse, or he just said that's not good enough and kind of called him out for it. He's gonna get some cash though. Bucks? I don't know who signs him.
Do you think he gets?
I mean, the Bucks, is he? Does he?
No, maybe not the Bucks.
Do you think he surpasses
Eagles,
Titans?
Titans
wouldn't surprise me if they finally get a big receiver.
Titans would make some sense.
Do you think he could surpass Antonio Brown money, which we don't know exactly yet? So maybe that's a bad question. But do you think he's a guy that could get paid to the point where a guy with that many question marks is the highest paid receiver in the league?
Timing is everything. Nobody was ready to believe that Ndamukong Suh would be paid more than J.J. Watt, but once you have multiple teams bidding on you, that's when people get paid.
And all this cap speed, it's tricky because this Brown almost hurts Jeffrey's chances of – I think he would have made 16, 17 a year. Like if JPP's making 17 a year, Alshon Jeffrey, like that's a going rate for a high-level free agent right now.
I don't like the trend of now that we all have money – let's start spending it egregiously on players that have issues. I mean, it was a couple years ago that we were talking about Alteron Verner getting paid major cash and the guys on the street. It's like I some of this stuff, at the free agency period every year, it's like, slow down, please.
Well, the best teams aren't involved in it outside the Broncos. None of the model franchises are going out and writing checks for free agents.
Yeah, he's got the red flags, but he's also, if he was in the draft – and you're just not talking about the red flag. I mean, he's maybe the number, you know, one pick or number two or three pick.
Again,
you basically know you get the all pro, right?
And you get him for 4 years at an affordable cost. It's like this is a major investment in a player with, you know, overt and maybe covert question marks.
Covert. Dig it there.
They kind of fit together.
Okay. Moving on, out of tag talk. We're still tackle talk. Well, not technically a tackle. He's a center, but he's on an offensive line. But it won't be the offensive line of the New York Jets because Nick Mangold, after 11 fine seasons in New York, was let go, released on Friday, which was the latest indication yet that the Jets are in a full-blown rebuild mode because Mangold is old but not ancient. He's 33 and has always played at a high level. This past year, the injury is an ankle injury, which is pretty serious as it turned out. Kind of messed up his season this year, but the Jets continue to move away and clear salary because they had one of the more kind of messed up situations is that the Jets, despite having a roster not filled with talent, had one of the more bloated salary caps, and they had to do something about that. So it leads to tough decisions, including goodbye to Nick Mangold. We'll get to him a little later in the top 101 list because I do have a question about where he ended up ranking. But I think it would be good. We haven't heard from him in a while. I talked to my dad briefly, Keith Hanzus, about the Jets and where their offseason is going. So, Sid, why don't we check back in with my dad?
His name is Keith. He's Dan's dad. No doubt about it, he's a big Jets fan. What is he going to say about the game?
The release of Mangold is a terrible move, I think, for the Jets at this time. I know they're trying to reduce the cap space, but I still think he's a leader, and I was against that move. So we'll see how that all plays out because their offensive line is in bad shape. Revis, I think they should eliminate him at this point because
I think his
play from last year was terrible, and we'll see what happens. Quarterback that still seems to be, I think a trade has to be done. Okay, we can't go with the guys we have right now. So that's it. Thanks.
Listen, Mark, when I say we're heading toward the corner, you listen to my dad's voice. Not a lot of time. Not a lot of things to be excited about right now.
Well, listen, there are a lot of corners. He's on the second corner right now. You ain't taking my corner. But he nailed one thing. You look at New York's depth chart along the offensive line. It was bad last year. They absolutely need to address it in every way they can.
They have both their guards are signed.
Three starters.
They have two guards. And everything else is undecided. And that was a great draft. I think it was a Tannenbaum draft. They got Mangold and Brick Ferguson in the same round. Now both those guys are out the door.
You can't keep Nick Mangold at $9 million.
Yep.
Coming off missing half a season, not playing well in the half or the same level that he played. I'm sure they tried to get him to take a pay cut, and I'm sure he's at the point of his career that he's interested in looking to see what else is out there, and who can blame him.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the move, and I wish him the best because he was one of my favorite Jets. Moving on, this is interesting. Ravens safety Matt Elam, a former first-round pick in 2013, was arrested on three drug-related charges early Sunday morning in Miami. Elam was booked at 3:45 a.m. on charges of possession of more than 20 grams of marijuana, possession with intent to sell or deliver, and possession of a controlled substance. He's being held on a $15,500 bond. He was initially pulled over for reckless driving. Well, I mean, this guy's a rich man, I would think, former first-round pick, even after
he's just hitting free agency now.
What are you doing? Come back to us, Matt. How much is that? I don't know how grams are. What is a gram? How much is it?
That's more than a quarter pound of
that's
weed.
A lot.
Oh,
it's
Matt.
A lot. It's insane.
Oh, what, Matt.
You've
come back to us, Matt.
This is intent to sell. He's not going to just do it all.
2017. Well, I don't know.
Well, what's worse?
In theory. I'm not saying that's any better. But
well, I saw some things on Twitter. People don't understand metric measurements. They're like, well, he's trying to be the new Sam Hurd. No. Sam Hurd was trying to be Marlowe from The Wire. He was like a kingpin. This is just like – this sounds more like I'm going to have a lot to bring for all my friends at a party. Like, there's no reason he should be carrying around this much when you've got that much money at stake.
Matt.
I don't know.
Well, and the Ravens have basically said, not in our plans for next season,
right.
Which is not, at this point, not a surprise. He's also been a disappointment as a player.
Is not in our plans for the 2017 Ravens.
I've never heard of a statement about a guy who's technically a free agent.
Well, because this is a team that's a couple years removed. People, the stink isn't on them as much today, but they're a couple years removed from a massive PR disaster with an off the field issued late in player, and they're probably as quick as they can be to get rid of this.
Wouldn't it have been cool if it was 21 grams? Because there was that movie.
Yeah, I mean, to a very small group of people that would get that connection. Yeah,
Sean
that was Benfield, a different that was a different substance, 21 grams. But yeah,
what was that, booger sugar?
Yeah,
essentially.
Let's see what else. Let's get through the rest of this news. Rob Gronkowski, summer of Gronk getting off to an early start. For whatever reason, he was at the Daytona 500 as a sideline reporter. Why not? And this is how it played out. They cut to Gronk, who was with a gaggle of what they were Monster Energy Girls, they were called. Let's hear how that exchange went with Rob Gronkowski.
Gronk, what do you got down that
way? What's up? We got another Monster Energy Girl right here. We got Ashley. I did a photo shoot with her. She's the best. Hey, Ashley, what's your favorite speed limit out there? I hope it's somewhere around 70 or something. What is it?
I am hardcore. I like to go as fast as possible.
Ooh, I like that answer. Back to you, Mike.
You're looking confused, Greg. What's the closest number to 70?
I'm not confused. I get the terrible joke. I'm confused why they would put Gronkowski in a position to try to be funny. That's just terrible.
Do you think he was fed that? Or do you think
he
loves 69 so
much? I think
much?
He thought that was an amazing joke.
Yes, I agree. I think he thought that.
That's what my face was.
I don't think he slept at night either because he's like, Ashley, we did a photo shoot together. How could she let me down in a big spot?
I have no words for what we've just listened to.
And finally, Mark, you had no words there, but I'm going to need some words from you here because you are paid by the NFL as an analyst. So people come to you for the information. The Green Bay Packers have announced their coaching staff for the 2017 season, and David Rye has been appointed the team's offensive perimeter coach. For the fans out there, the layman, can you break down what an offensive perimeter coach does?
Very excited about this signing. I think it's a new frontier for the Packers. Chris, I would like to hear what you think he'll be doing.
Wow.
I think he'll be monitoring the perimeter.
That was like Warren Beatty like passing it off to Faye Dunaway because he knew that the Oscar situation was FUBAR. Mm. You just did the same thing. You're Warren Beatty. Congratulations.
So the perimeter is everything outside the numbers?
Right. So before – I mean,
Is it a spread offensive coordinator on some
level? No, now you can't jump back in now, Mark.
I can do whatever I want to do.
How about
that? Sit down.
If you think about it, it's a genius move.
Good for you!
Why is it a genius move,
Well,
Greg?
For decades, century almost, we've only been worried about the interior. They're the first coach to say, no, let's have a coach out there on the perimeter. We're going to get that part of the
field. I think it's probably like someone needed it. Mike McCarthy's got a lot of friends out there. Someone's like, I need a job. He's like, oh, yeah, we'll get you a job. And they'll come up with a very fancy name for getting this fellow on the payroll.
That's one way to look at it.
I mean, nobody
Dave
can
Rye.
Explain what it is. So.
Well, he's been with the Packers for 3 years.
You've ascended into this role.
He spent the 2014-15 season as a coaching administrator. In 2016 as an assistant offensive line coach. So, obviously, the man has a really good football pedigree to be able to be offensive line. What's more interior
right.
than the offensive line? And now he's moving out to the perimeter. Mm.
Isn't that the inverse of the perimeter?
Yeah.
The interior.
Well, he knows the enemy.
Maybe it's a little bit like the NBA. Everything in the NBA is all about three-point shooting, the perimeter. Packers thinking money ball, perimeter.
Money analysis, Greg.
Huge stretch.
All right. Enough of that. That's what's happening in the news. Now that's what I really want to get to. This is the centerpiece of today's show because Wes and Greg, the scientists, every year they get together and they put their heads together and they deliver something that the football cognoscenti gets excited about. It is... the free agency. One. Oh. One.
Sell it, baby.
The two of you work up a list of 101 or a little bit more, and then you have someone, an underling perhaps, take those two lists, combine them into one to make your free agency 101. And this is how you know, Mark. And, Mark, I want you involved in the segment, too. I know this is about these two scientists.
We'll see.
But we definitely should have a voice in the room here. And I need your support,
I'll support you.
This is why you know that the scientists have gotten a little bit of juice within the universe of the football cognoscenti. It's because... people write articles about the free agency 101, different team websites, pops up here and there, maybe ESPN, a beat writer. Oh, this is three Indianapolis Colts were on the NFL.com top 101. You guys, that's sweat equity that you guys have poured into this over several years, and now it's paying off in a big spot.
I hope sweat equity replaces optics as the new buzzword.
I mean, it paid off with that intro that you beautifully timed. That's when it all felt like it came to fruition.
I would say I timed it. I don't think it timed beautifully at all. But so here we are, and Mark and I are here as well to almost to keep you guys – first of all, keep your egos in check because you guys are probably –
good luck with that.
flying high right now with all this press you're getting. But what we're going to do is we're going to break down this list. And if you're listening at home, if you're driving, don't do this. But if you're, sitting on the train or you're sitting in the backseat of a carpool situation or if you're laying on your couch, nude potentially, get your laptop out or your portable device and pull up the top 101.
Oh, wow.
You can find at NFL.com/.
Top free agents.
Not the best vanity URL.
Top free agents. That's a new one.
Yeah. I wouldn't call that the best vanity.
You know, these are out of – these decisions are – I trust in the
– Who did make that
executives
decision?
Making them. It was not an underlean, by the way, you know, putting together these rankings. It's, you know, most of this room's editor, Ali Bonpuri.
Yeah, Ali.
Smashed
Ali
them up.
Does great work with the original content team here at NFL Media.
Called by you an underling.
I wasn't aware until
now. Okay. I thought there was – yeah. That would seem wrong of you.
Hopefully nobody remembers that about an hour before the show, I said, Ali, do you know who actually tabulated this? And he's like, it was me.
All right. Well.
All right. Anyway, Ali, I love you. Here we go. I think the best way to go through this, first of all, let's just we'll check out the top 10. I'm just curious the top 10, and then we'll kind of break it down.
It's been blown to smithereens from these franchise tags already.
All right. So
as you predicted.
All right. Let's, in terms of who is still there, let's even draw it out to 15 or so. Who is not going to be affected by the franchise tag situation,
right,
most likely, as of the taping of this podcast?
Well, assuming Eric Berry and Kirk Cousins get tagged, you know, they would be on top of the list right now. But assuming they get tagged, the top of the list is going to be Alshon Jeffrey, I think, at number one.
Who was number one last year when the dust settled or cleared?
Was it Malik Jackson?
I think it was Malik Jackson.
Alshon's
who did
buzzer.
Get the
I like
most.
Alshon better.
Yeah, definitely.
Calais Campbell will be a big name.
Brandon Williams, who I don't think is going to get tagged, is number three. I think could get snacks type of money. Then a couple guys, Melvin Ingram, I think will get tagged. Sounds like from Rap Sheet, JPP got tagged. Donta Hightower, we have to see how the Patriots handle him. I think he'll get out there. Maybe he gets the transition tag, which means he can sign a contract with another team. Then you got A.J. Bouye of the Texans at cornerback, Stephon Gilmore, Kevin Zeitler, Bengals guard. See, it's already getting in the weeds here.
And, you know,
Jermaine Johnson.
Jumping around.
Terrell Pryor.
TP's there. He'll probably get tagged, you would think. Yeah. Or maybe not.
I don't think so. Sounds like that's not happening.
And one jumping around a little bit here, but we talked about Kenny Stills before the show. When we're talking about the kind of like what is the vibe right now around the idea of free agency in this league, and why and how does Kenny Stills kind of stand in as someone that kind of personifies what's going on right now?
This is something that Greg has been talking about for a few days now, that free everyone's got used to be that if you have 15 to 20 million in salary cap, that was a lot of salary cap space. You were going to be a big player in free agency, maybe control things. Now everybody's got that much money. Some teams have 60 to 70 million. The Browns, I think, have 100 million. Everybody's got money to spend. And when you hear the Miami Herald report that Kenny Stills has a $12 million a year market, it's crazy.
Wow.
$12 million a year for a number three receiver who is coming off a career year from a touchdown point of view. But I don't think anybody – Kenny Stills is nobody's idea of an ideal deep threat.
Well, a guy that the – and I think he has potential, like as a good role player, maybe a number two receiver. But a guy that the Saints essentially gave up on and, you know, is coming off, I guess, his best season, which had 726 yards. That's why this Antonio Brown signing – I think they saw the Alshon Jeffrey move, you know, getting to free agency. And, the, you know, these reports are out there about Kenny Stills. And it's like, we better sign Antonio Brown quick before things get crazy, because the amount of money, you said it, people get worked up about who has the most cap room. What's the difference between $40 million and $80 million? You got enough. More than half the league has more than $35 million, and that's before some of these roster cuts and everything that's going to go on in the next week in terms of, you know, saving some room and moving money around. Like, there's more than enough. Teams can pay who they want, like, just about. Like, 20 teams can do what they
doesn't
want.
Doesn't that kind of, on some level, I don't want to say cheapen the salary cap, but the cap for well-disciplined teams, it works in their favor because they know how to play the game. But there's so much money now, and the cap keeps on going up and up and up. Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of, like, having, like, the Browns last year? We're going to clear salary cap. We're going to start over. And they have a lot of money, but it's maybe not as valuable because even teams that didn't have the same outlook can spend on X, Y, and Z.
It's crazy because a year ago, and, I mean, bad teams struggle to re-sign their own players if they want to get to market and go somewhere and win along with make a lot of money. So that's a separate challenge. But it was a year ago that teams like Cleveland were saying, oh, well, we're not going to invest in our own free agents. We're clearing cap room. And it feels 365 days later like a completely – that's gone. I don't know how many more teams, if this continues, are going to even have to think that way. There's an excess of cash, and it's going to lead to players being completely overpaid. Well, and it's not good for football.
Well, what is that?
I don't think.
It's good for the players.
It's good for the
players. But, I mean,
if they don't get that money, it goes to the owner.
Right. Like, I don't have any problem with them making a lot. What it does is I think it's going to make this free agent period every year get more and more boring. And I think we're seeing that. This is not a great list. At the top, it's fine. I think the top 25 is not too different than normal. But it got bad in a hurry in terms of finding starters, because you gotta spend that money, and the teams are going to spend that money in June and July and August on their own players. Like, who can the Jets find to pay? Do they have some people on their roster they can pay? Whoever it is, just pay them. Start paying.
You don't have to make those tough decisions where it's like, wow, this name got released and we're all stunned by it. There's going to be a lot less of that.
I mean, the draft is so important, because if teams can pay their own guys, they keep them on their team. And it's not like maybe before free agency, a player got stuck with a team forever and they kind of got screwed because of they're getting paid. So in a way, everybody kind of wins because the team is keeping their guys and able to spend money, and the guys are getting paid. So maybe the NFL has it right, and maybe all that talk about the players got banged by the latest CBA, that doesn't seem like something that's a big story anymore. You know, a few points here and there going in the side of the owners, but they're getting paid here.
Maybe the Giants – I mean, it worked because the Giants signed – good players that fit their system, but maybe they knew what they were doing last year when a handful of quality starter type of guys got out there. Maybe they just got lucky.
Maybe it was purely desperation.
Sure,
and they just signed the
but
right
it worked.
They were trying to save jobs. They paid a premium,
and I think those deals now don't look so crazy. And I think it was smart because that quality of player, there's even fewer of them this year. Think about the Raiders. Like, the Raiders were the team that was in ultimate cap hell just 2 or 3 years ago, and now they have, what, $45 million? I mean, they have all the room they could use.
All right. So let's go. You know, why don't we do this? Hey, let's go down to the lab.
Oh, wow.
Open the door. Let's go down there. Okay. Here we are. We're in the lab.
Out in the lab.
Great lab. Listen, you guys have a lot of Bunsen burners, a lot of beakers. There's a phone in there ringing off the hook for some reason.
It's an old rotary phone.
Yeah, this is where Chris Wessling and Greg Rosenthal do their work. And I have some questions.
Okay.
And you guys can answer to them. And here's the first one. And I found this interesting because I have in my hands, I was given permission to look at both of your lists. And where you guys differed. I was curious what some players where you guys really differed. And the most amazing thing to me was, especially if you look in the top 25, you guys are really in the same ballpark, and you do these independently. Some of you guys had exact hits. Guys like A.J. Bouye, both at number 12. Calais Campbell's at 7 and 8. Alshon Jeffrey is at 6 and 8. JPP, 11 and 10. You guys are in the ballpark, but not at all of them.
The good players we pretty much agreed on, the top 20, 25 players more.
Yeah, it's the bad players where we disagree.
This one kind of hits, and this hits at what a lot of people thought was really harsh criticism from Wes directed at Greg about
a lot of people thought
quarterback.
Streets were talking.
Streets talking about quarterback judgment because there are two quarterbacks, and I'll start with Mike Glennon, who Greg had just outside his top 25. And I guess might end up in the top 25 when all these things shake out with the franchise tags at 26. Wessling had him all the way at 64. And I think, Greg, we've talked about it a little bit, but you think Glennon, to be at 26, that is somebody that is a starter, you would think, on a team in 2017.
Has a good chance to start, yeah. I think quarterback gets a bump. There's no doubt, because it's the most valuable position. So let's look at the guys who are around 26 on our list. Riley Reiff, not anyone's, you know, vision of an all-pro tackle. Zach Brown, a guy who we couldn't have cared less about a year ago at this time. Larry Warford. I mean, these are not like superstar players. There's guys that you
Patrick has the jerseys of both those guys.
These are guys you think they can come in and maybe be a solid starter. Mike Glennon showed a lot of potential, I thought, in his first 2 years, and I watched every one of his snaps back then. I remember his rookie year. I went back to see where did he end up in the year-end QB index, where I'm watching every play, I'm grading it. He was the 21st, 22nd ranked quarterback. As a rookie with some terrible offensive coordinators, I thought he showed some things, some anticipation, some accuracy, some big arm. If you've got a guy who can could possibly be a starting quarterback, I don't think it's crazy to put him that high.
As Wes, I mean, Mark, you and I both have skin in the game with needing a quarterback. Would you mind having Glennon as a hold-the-fort type guy?
I would not mind giving someone like Mike Glennon a tryout. I'm rooting for a team that's not had good quarterback play in about a quarter of a century, so why not? But I'd have him somewhere in between where Wes and Greg do. I would say this, though, that there's been very little buzz around Mike Glennon compared to what was an annual right around this time for 3 or 4 years in a row where Mike Glennon was dangled as trade bait.
Makes sense, though.
Every draft
he disappeared for 2 years.
I mean, he really did.
Jameis Winston got drafted.
And he wasn't as, to be fair, he wasn't as good in his second year. Now, granted, he was on his third coordinator in 2 years, which is tough for any young quarterback, including Jeff Tedford, who like left after two games, and Marcus Arroyo, who's barely in the league, and Mike Sullivan, who's probably never going to get a coordinator job. It was a tough situation, and he didn't play that great in his second season, which I think is partly what sticks in Wes's craw.
Well, bad quarterbacks are easy to find. That's why I didn't rank him high, and he's a bad quarterback. You can take any film of any quarterback in the NFL and find a game or two here and there where he impressed.
But that was a season, though, a rookie season. It was like 11
a rookie
starts.
Season in which he finished dead last in drive success percentage in the NFL. And this is a thing that we have disagreed over the years. I don't like quarterbacks who don't move the sticks consistently. Mike Glennon moves the sticks as inconsistently as any quarterback I've seen in the past few years. To me, he's a rich man Zach Mettenberger, and I don't want that. I'd rather have Brian Hoyer, who can move an offense.
He's definitely riskier. You're right. I'm giving a lot to potential. Over those 2 years combined, he was ranked 19th in QBR. So it's not like I'm crazy out on a limb here with Glennon. And like we look at some of the other guys on this list, it's like
I get
these are guys that weren't that good. Like you had Matt Khalil and Mike Remmers. You know, 50 and 51 on your list. I had them much. Those guys were terrible tackles for their
teams. Well, Mike Remmers is a right tackle who was forced to play out of position at left tackle, and I think a lot of people disparage him because Von Miller destroyed him in the Super Bowl. But he was a quality right tackle in 2015 season.
All I mean is, like, these are guys who have had some big-time struggles at tackle. I'm going to give Glennon a little chance. I think you should be excited if the Jets get Glennon. It depends on the price.
He doesn't pass the look test.
That's true. His mobility is a problem.
There's a much more radioactive quarterback ranking if you click into their individual rankings that I simply cannot get on board with.
Tell me who it is.
I don't want to drive too deep. I mean, we can go through the 11
quarterbacks
through 20.
Now,
but
I know.
You have Geno Smith at number 65, and I know that you like Geno Smith and that you see promise in him. Wes, he's not even on your anywhere in your.
Not even tempted. I ranked 125. If I ranked 200, I wouldn't have put Geno Smith on there. He's a bad football player.
And I think you'd have to ignore what Geno Smith has been in the locker room too to think
exactly.
He's 65 too. I just would like to know your reasoning. Is it potential again?
I don't think his tape is that bad as a pro. And yes, quarterbacks get, especially young quarterbacks, get a little bit of a bump. You know, when
still
we're
on this hill, huh?
We're talking about 60. Like, this is where Cordarrelle Patterson is, who's a special teamer.
I can use him.
Right. I don't think it's that crazy to think of Geno Smith as a quality backup with some potential.
I don't want Geno Smith in my locker room.
He had 6.9 yards per attempt in his career. We haven't seen him in 2 years. The last time we saw him, he played very well for a month. Maybe I'm hanging on to too much of that, but I really think the New York media stink and all the off-field stuff is on him in a way that it wouldn't be if he was just on some other team.
You have him higher than Brian Hoyer. I would take Hoyer over Geno Smith.
I would take Hoyer over Geno Smith, too. In fact, that could end up happening with the Jets this year, where they kind of swap those.
And
guys.
He ends up higher.
Here's
this is checks
thing.
And balances. It's like the government. It works out this well. I knew Wes wasn't going to rank him,
just,
so maybe you juice
branch
him up
here.
A little bit.
Oh, that's what happened.
The problem with Geno Smith, by the way, is that, yes, he's flashed moments, but he's also
– games.
Okay,
more than games. Month.
Let's not go crazy here, though. He's a turnover machine who has had some issues in the locker room. And he's a quarterback. You don't want a quarterback with some locker room pop to him.
But he's like Jay Cutler East.
I have a hard time with that stuff. I wish we knew more. Like, we don't know. I think there's a lot of quarterbacks that we don't know about. Maybe Hoyer might be on that list that doesn't have the greatest reputation. And a lot of quarterbacks that get maligned that actually their teammates like. And Frank, and we don't know because we're just here. Like,
quarterbacks have been punched out.
What we do know is more than a lot of other quarterbacks are bringing to the table in a negative way.
I think he worked. I will say I think he lands in the right spot ultimately. Like, I'm fine that he's 89 on the list. You know, checks and balances.
See, since you brought it up, I will say when he did get his jaw broken by a teammate, which, again, is a thing that happened, the only person that came to his defense was Brandon Marshall. That said so much.
Brandon Marshall comes to everyone's defense.
All right. Let's move on. All right, here we go. So everybody's going to get paid, especially you would think in the top 20, 30.
I mean, if you watch the NFL Network today, Geno Smith had 5 minutes on the NFL Network. He's a hot ticket. Don't give up.
Still trying to piece that together.
Hot ticket.
Sounding like Charlie Casserly said.
Yeah,
that boy's he's a hot ticket.
Everybody's going to get paid, definitely in the higher reaches of this list. But what player, gentlemen, and Mark as well, do you think will get paid and the team will regret that they gave out bundles of cash, a guy that has the possibility, even though you put him kind of in a good spot on this list, the top 50 or so, jumps out to you as a potential bust candidate as a signer?
Hmm. Good question. One that pops to my head just because I've seen the report. Well, Kenny Stills, first of all, if he gets $12 million a year. But I like Nick Fairley. I think I pushed pretty hard for Nick Fairley to be higher on this list last year, and he came through with a good season. If he's getting $10 million a year, which I read about in one New Orleans report on a multi-year contract, I think that's a player you'd be a little worried about giving that sort of guaranteed. I think he's a good player, but that's one where you could see him getting overpaid.
I don't know what to do with Nick Fairley. I thought he was fatter than ever last year, and
he
played
great.
Fatter than ever.
Right.
He had his best season at his fattest. What are you going to do with him?
So, yeah.
He's one of those guys, like, it's value. You know what I mean? Like, you get him on the year that they're cheap. I don't want him on the year they're expensive.
I think there's risk to Terrell Pryor. I mean, he showed a lot last year, and there's no taking away from the commitment he put into switching positions, which is so hard to do, and to play at the level he did for much of it. But if you're going to hand out a multi-year lucrative contract, it's to a player that has as short of a track record at wide receiver as anyone that could get a multi-year deal and be ranked this high on this list.
My counterpoint to that is he gave some really good cornerbacks fits last year, 1,000-yard season, and he's still kind of finding his way. You might be able to get him at a good value if you truly believe he can become an all-pro type guy.
If he reaches his peak, yes, and then it's just I think he's a mystery player. We don't know that it's going to translate 2-3 seasons from now.
I got one for you. And you have him at number 13 on this list, Stephon Gilmore, the Bills, who, you know, he has he's a name brand, but is he a guy that you want to, if you pay Stephon Gilmore big money in this free agency market, he's going to be probably in the top 5 cornerbacks in the league?
Probably.
And is that a good value buy?
He's been inconsistent. When Rex Ryan got in Buffalo, when he landed there, he immediately singled out Stephon Gilmore as a lockdown cornerback, one of those guys who can trail wide receivers around the field. And I know Rex's system places a lot of responsibility on cornerbacks, but he got exploited at times last year. I think he even got benched at one point.
Yep.
Stephon Gilmore did not play well all last season. I thought he was much better the year before, so it depends who you're getting, but he's got the tools. I think people maybe are a little too worried about A.J. Bouye, and Gilmore might be the more risky signing.
Bouye you have at 12.
And that was one where we differed very slightly. I think I put Gilmore one spot ahead of Bouye just because
Can we settle this, Bouye or Bouye?
Bouye. A.J. Bouye.
This is important.
I have no conviction in my pronunciation.
All right, we'll defer to Bouye.
I'm pretty sure, but
go ahead.
That's what I heard.
Just want to make sure we got that settled.
I try to look at – I think sometimes we – do this and free agency happens, GMs, you get paid off the previous year. But try to think about 3 years. I mean, this is a guy who's put up a lot of good film in his career, Stephon Gilmore. So I wouldn't be that worried about paying him. I'd be more worried about the one-year guys. Like, Tony Jefferson was a great player for the Cardinals. You know who else was great? Like, DJ Swearinger, who's been kicking around the league playing safety for the Cardinals. He kind of came out of nowhere, not a huge physical specimen. And because teams need safety so bad, like, he could get a monster contract. He pops to mind.
In this same conversation on the Simmons podcast with Lombardi, Lombardi would call him, like, RJ Bouye. They would just keep rolling.
Bouye, I get what you're saying. He also seems like he could be a guy who's an ascendant talent.
Yeah.
and still has room to improve. I think he's a guy who works really hard.
I think they're both great. I had them both in the top 12 overall, just trying to pick between one, between the other.
Well, cornerback is one of the key positions, obviously, in football. Here's a question. What are, in free agency, when we look at this list, what are positions of strength where there's a lot of depth, where you can get value, and there's a list to go down? If you miss this guy, you can still get this guy or this guy. And on the flip side, what are positions that are really light? I know offensive line is one of them.
You can't get good tackles. It's very hard, but you can get good guards. Kevin Zeitler of the Bengals is a good guard. T.J. Lang of the Packers. You've got – who's the guy from the – Larry Warford from the Lions. You've got good guards. And I think defensive tackle is a strong – Brandon Williams, Dontari Poe, and Jonathan Hankins is really good for the Giants, too. I think if you want a run-stuffy defensive tackle, this is the year for you.
He's going to be hard to keep, too, now that I think of them paying all that money to JPP. They're paying it to Snacks. Can you pay all four guys on your line more than $12 million?
Alan Branch, too, from the Patriots, who was the monstrous guy in the middle of their defensive line that hasn't allowed a 90-yard rusher in a long time.
I don't get the Bengals allowing Kevin Zeitler just to float away, because that, to me, if you want to flip side and look at value type of guys, I think if you pay him what the market is for a very solid guard, you're going to get years of good play out of him. That's the kind of guy that you want to get in free agency, in my book.
It's weird. They have this kind of MO that they don't pay guards. Like, that's just what they do. That they didn't pay Eric Steinbach. They didn't pay Bobby Williams. Those are two guys I can think of that left for whatever reason. That's kind of just what they do.
Well, I think after watching Obuye, the other Obuye,
try to play tackle last year,
maybe they have to move him inside the guard.
Daniel Jeremiah, your buddy, moved sticks. Yeah. Dan. He says this is a terrible tackle class, and so that's a trouble. Like, everyone needs offensive tackle right now.
Hey, what about my team?
There's none available. Like, Riley Reiff is another answer for a guy who's going to get overpaid probably, just because he's a guy who's okay and he plays that position. I don't know what your team needs two tackles.
That's what I'm saying. So I can't get any relief in free agency or the draft. That's what I'm hearing from people.
Well,
that know.
And neither can the Jets quarterback. I mean, that's going to be a bloodbath.
Then again, like, sometimes
I'm coming, Mark. I'm coming for that corner.
Take it. I'd be happy. This whole thing is just ridiculous.
But then again, sometimes they're like, this class is loaded in plug and play.
Nobody 10-year
knows. Starter offensive lineman. Just watch Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, Chance Warmack. Like, it's like,
The Jets will draft someone in the fifth round that no one's heard of in this studio, which wouldn't be hard to do. And then you know what? He'll play for five straight years. You never know.
That'd be great. Anyway, speaking of my Jets, Nick Mangold, 71. I think you guys are underselling him a little bit. If he's healthy.
He's 33.
He's 33 years old.
33 is not ancient. Mm.
For a center in the NFL, you don't see too many centers over 33.
I'm not saying like a rich five-year deal, but if he goes to a contender, don't be surprised if he's having a really nice season.
He could do a Chris Long, go get a Super Bowl ring.
Do an Alex Mack.
This Mangold thing brings up an interesting, at least to me, point of order. So Mangold gets cut on Saturday, and I see that. Oh, got to make an adjustment to the top 100. It's going up Monday morning. Wes is off gallivanting around.
That's one way to put it.
The South Coast.
What?
With who knows.
Wes is on fire.
With who knows what. With his... You know, with this lovely paramour, but also just meeting all sorts of cast of characters, like it could be some sort of movie. Should I bug him about Nick Mangold, or should I just make an executive decision and just throw him on? You know, where I choose to decide. I didn't bug him.
Yeah, thank you.
I was
at the Figueroa Mountain Brewery and ran into one of our podcast listeners. Andy was tending bar at this place. Nice guy. Set me up. Sent you guys a message. Good guy.
Did he send us any beer? That would be better.
He did.
Oh, good.
I have it, and I will bring it in.
To us. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, we saw a clip of it. I do like the fact that 19 out of 20 podcast listeners that you've met and befriended are bartenders.
Well, that's what you're going to have. Where else am I going
to
go?
Right. Well, who else does Wes speak to?
Next,
other than us, like in the world.
Yeah, I mean,
his brothers, some bartenders.
I don't think I'm going to run into museum curators.
Probably not.
Who knows? Maybe we're huge in the museum curator industry. You never know.
That would necessitate me being in the museum to meet him or her.
I like the idea of Wes, a movie about Wes's weekend with his paramour, and I like it being called Road Trip. But there was a movie that came out about 15 years ago with Tom Green and some other people. Barely remember that movie. Who else was in it?
Well, they were going to Ithaca College, of all places.
Yeah. Breckin Meyer was involved, I believe. Anyway, but to change it, we put a slammer at the end. Road Trip!
With a slammer? If we could get into the Friday night's activities, then we could really unearth some interesting nuggets.
I think that's we'll save that for the After Hours podcast.
The After Hours Swingers podcast.
Skinamax edition of the Around the NFL podcast.
I thought
fair to say?
I thought my original idea for what
I thought not fair to say.
My original idea for what the movie would be called was better, as much as I like yours. Sideways 2.
Sideways
2. That's it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
People love franchises.
Sideways 2.
Yeah. People love franchises. Been a while since Sideways has been out. And it's like you just read.
But then you're connecting it to Sideways.
Well, you're in the same area. Yeah, you're in the same area.
Okay.
But now it's Wes and the Paramore. It's a whole different thing.
It's one of those sequels where, like, the writer, the director, anyone attached to the first incarnation do not acknowledge this part two on any level.
It's like American Psycho 2 starring Mila Kunis.
Yeah, Mila.
It's a thing that exists.
Yeah.
Sideways, one of my favorite movies, too.
Yeah, that was it's all worth
it. Yeah, but what about the slammer? Road Trip!
I like both of them.
I like that.
To tell the truth, I'd accept either one.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, here
we go. How about this? Wait, sorry.
Yeah.
Road Trip, slammer, colon, Sideways 2.
Winner. Or Sideways 2, colon, Road Trip.
I know, but that everyone's expecting more of a title. This way you throw them off. You think it's something else. Then, oh, wait, it's Sideways 2 at the end.
Yeah, nobody ever puts.
So it's completely wrong-sided marketing.
Exactly. Nobody puts the sequel number after the colon.
Right.
Can you put a colon
That's
after
very
a slammer?
Smart.
Huh?
Can you put a colon
the slammer
after a slammer?
Is the colon in that. Well,
No,
I think we could do what we want. Well, These guys are hammered. They're driving up the coast. They put colons after slammers.
What the hell's going on out here?
But graphically, because you could play with it when you're selling the movie, the colon has the line on top. So it's a slammer and a colon at once.
I love it.
Okay. Works for me.
Settled that. Here's some snap judgments, gentlemen, I would like you to make, because these players are not, and I'm saying snapped, I'm saying you got to get. I'm going to go back and forth. You're going to tell me where they are in the top 101 if they end up making it. Jay Cutler, Greg. Mm. Snap. Throwing it to Wes.
40.
Yeah, right ahead of Mike Glennon. Probably everyone you ask me, I'm going to place right ahead of Mike Glennon.
How dare you? I'm even higher than that. I'm going.
Let's go. Snap it up.
25.
Adrian Peterson.
He'll be top 10.
No, he will not be in my top 30.
Once these franchise
give me a number.
Okay, maybe 20.
20. Wes.
I would definitely have Adrian Peterson over Terrell Pryor. So that would put him in the top 15 for me.
Doug Martin.
Oh.
I think.
Toughy.
I think right above Mike Glennon.
That's 40, a toughy.
41.
Right above Mike Glennon. We have Eddie Lacy at 39. I am definitely putting him below because the off-field stuff, I got to learn more about what's going on. It seems like a really serious
I'll tell you about it after the show. Brandon Marshall. Can help somebody.
He's
old, though.
You have to rank him ahead of Kenny Britt, who is at 38. I would say Brandon Marshall in the 20s.
Pierre Garçon is 29. I think I might put Brandon Marshall just ahead of Pierre Garçon, even though he's a few years
sure
older.
It's a short-term contract.
25.
It's a better player 26. Than Pierre Garçon.
That's what I'm saying.
Also, wears out his welcome everywhere he goes.
It does. And finally, Jamal Charles.
He's tricky. Mm. He's turning 30. He has barely played in 2 years.
We had a similar guy on the list last year named Arian Foster, who we put at number 30. Which ended up being way too high. We have Latavius Murray at 57. I'm definitely not putting him above Murray or Blunt. The running backs definitely get discounted on this list a little bit. I mean, he's probably in the 60s or 70s.
Oh, no, I'd take him way ahead of Latavius Murray. Mm. I want a good running back, and Jamal Charles might someday get that back. I don't know if Latavius Murray's ever going to be a good running
back.
That's fair. You could look at him as this year's Arian Foster, where high upside, but you know what happens.
It's easy to make that connection and then to a year later say, boy, why didn't we see that coming? But it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah.
Right. No, I could be willing to be convinced. I think you're right because when he plays and he's right, he's a great player. He's not that old.
All right. And, again, you could check all this out.
Sorry if those weren't snappy enough for you.
But I got the info. Just looking for something like I wanted like Adrian Peterson, 6'4". Jamal Charles, 37, 49.
Well, it gives us something to work on for next year.
Okay, good. Like, watch how it works with Mark Sessler. Jay Cutler.
96.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. The final thing I have here, as we spend a long time in the lab, it's musty down here, by the way, guys. Should, get maybe a filter, an air filter down here.
That's the magnesium.
Which player in the top 25, name one player in the top 25, you are the most concerned about?
Why so negative?
A major, because I am asking the questions, so don't ask questions back.
Most concerned about what?
A big whiff. And I did look back at the 2016 list, just some examples. Mario Williams at 7. You had Brock Osweiler at 13. Ryan Fitzpatrick at 23. There will be some here that turn out to be either bad signings by the team, but also maybe you guys evaluated them improperly. Keeping it real. Who are you worried about? Like, you said, I have to put this guy high in the list, but in the back of my mind, this guy might be struggling to even have a job next year.
Whoa.
No one met like that. Well, Riley Reiff is 26. Not a sexy answer, because what do I know about Riley Reiff? Don Terry Poe, I could see being a guy.
I'll second the Poe pick.
Wow.
He didn't look as explosive. He used to be one of the most athletic big men you'll see, and I think he was more of a two-down guy last year as opposed to a three-down defensive tackle.
Mark, anything surprise you on this list? Really jumped out at you, and you said, what the heck?
No, I'm going to be honest. I think of all the years that we've dug into the free agent class that this is, and it's no reflection on the list that you guys did. You did a great job with it, but it's a low wattage group, and we can drum up excitement for, you know, what the top 10 will be a week from now, but it's free agency's changed this offseason, as we said at the top of the segment. So not surprised outside of the fact that it's less exciting than you'd think free agency would be.
Were you surprised that when Wes and Greg did their NFL Network hit on this list, they wore suit jackets in the podcast studio?
I think they look sharp. I don't know why what we normally wear was suddenly deemed not good enough. Because the next day we're all
Fair
wearing
point.
This stuff again.
Well, if anything, that's...
I don't think... Who drove... Where did the decision come from, I guess?
Yeah, where did that come from? Let's break that down.
I think, for me, it comes from an incredible insecurity about my work wardrobe when it comes to being on film because of all the feedback we've gotten over the years.
I
think I see NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal on TV, and he's often wearing a jacket. So for me, my mind just naturally went to jackets.
Is that NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal?
West, yeah.
Keep sending them in, folks.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
I talked over it. I want to hear it again.
Son, is that NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal?
Wow.
That was kind of like a deliverance.
Yeah,
very much so.
That was awesome.
Where'd that come from?
Tybee Island, probably.
That was from Rick Herrick. He's from Missouri. At Spanky Q.
Wow, he should do some Jeff Bridges voiceover work or something. That
would
be great.
We caught some heat, by the way. We were talking to one of the men with offices here that works in the NFL Network division, and we heard through the grapevine that one of the great higher-ups, now former higher-up, in this company, a third floor, which, as everyone knows, if you listen to the show, we are not popular figures or even really known figures.
Yeah, I'd say invisible.
Although he ironically was on the first floor.
For the people, you know, making more.
Was he?
Us. We were described as dweebs because we wear headsets in the studio.
That they look like a bunch of dweebs wearing the headsets. So at one point, there was an anti-headset movement.
That was coming back from a
little does he know that we don't need headsets to look like dweebs.
All right. With that said.
That your talk about the NFL Network hit reminded me, we will be on as a foursome.
Yes, we will.
Tuesday, around or up to the minute live, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. And that's right. I listed Pacific first. There's a lot of people out here. Pacific needs to start deserving some respect.
West Coast bias.
God!
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And again, the next time you hear from us will be Thursday. The show will emanate from Indianapolis. We'll have all six members. Very rare that you'll hear from all six members of the writing team. Well, technically, I'm no longer part of that writing team, but you're going to hear from all the five around the NFL writers, and then myself as well.
I mean, you write a lot.
Yeah, but I write for the End Around.
Okay.
Mm. NFL.com/EndAround. But all five writers of the Around the NFL team, myself, will all be part of the podcast on Thursday. So make sure you check that out, where we'll be breaking down those press conferences that happen every year leading into the combine, the coaches and the GMs. A lot of news always comes out of that. So check that out.
I hate to quibble, but your articles still do appear under the Around the NFL section of the website.
I'm working on that.
This is where really.
I'm going to eliminate that if it's the last thing I do. No, I like that. It keeps me connected on some level to the enterprise. And Wes, of course, is referring to NFL.com/AroundTheNFL.
Or NFL.com/news.
That's where you can read our stuff. So read it. Okay. And then next week, free agency week, three shows.
Mark. Also, go to Mark's author page and use the F8 function to find whatever you want.
Sure.
Good luck.
Three shows through middle of June.
Wes, save it for the F8 podcast.
That one's a scorcher. It's a scorcher.
All right. Let's go home. This is Dan Hansa signing off. For Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and new money behind the glass. Till Thursday in Indy! Loser. Dan bloopers after every show. That's fine. Let's go.